Moncrief on News Talk.
The Paddy Power Comedy Festival kicks off today, week in the Ivy Gardens in Dublin, featuring the usual raft of comedic talent. And among them will be someone with obviously a very strong association with comedy, but who's never done a solo comedy show before. It's called Out of His Head. Richard Cooper, good afternoon to you.
Hiya, Sean. Thanks very much indeed for having me.
Is it, when you look at your career so far, would you say it was mostly acting, though? Because I think of you as an actor now, really.
Yeah,
then.
It kind of is, really. I suppose I've always done both. And, I mean, I got into acting really from being interested in music. And, I mean, that all goes down to my childhood and all that. And my parents were very much involved in music. So I did an opera. I ended up doing an opera when I was nine. And so
what was the opera?
The opera was called Amal and the Night Visitors. Very, very, very famous. Huge production in Ireland.
Yes, right, okay.
But it was a school production in my mother's school. My mother was an Irish and music teacher. Mm. And it was on in Loretta Crumlin. And then it sort of transferred, if you like. It's sort of like a schoolboy, school person's version of the West End. It transferred to the RDS.
Oh,
and played there as their Christmas kind of opera.
Mm.
And so that was my first taste of it, really, of being on stage. But I had to learn a whole part. Like, I was the only boy in this opera amongst a whole raft of girls, which actually was pretty good deal, I think.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it. And so I kind of never really had a buzz like that. And as a result, I think I probably always had a bit of an issue with kind of being in school anyway. Mm. So that was a perfect like opportunity to not deal in the real world.
But there was a period where you wanted to pursue a career as a classical singer.
There was.
And as the man said to George Best, where did it all go wrong?
Exactly. So you're putting me in the category, George Best. That's great. A win-win. I probably went down that line for a little while, and it was something, again, like that my parents both did. My dad was a tenor, my mother was a soprano. So I learned a lot of the songs that they would have learned. And I trained as a classically, you know, I went to the College of Music and all of that. So I was singing all this formal stuff and how to project the voice and all that. And it just got a little bit kind of restricting, I think, or, you know, restrictive, the whole training aspect of it. And I remember a friend of mine saw me in the Fesh Ceoil. I entered the Fesh Ceoil at the age of 19, and I was up against, like, it's obviously an amateur competition, but I was up against all these people like in their 40s and 50s. And like the thing about the Fesh Ceoil is back then is that you all prepared the same song, right? So, which was blow, blow, the winter wind, thou art not so unkind as man's ingratitude. So it's a Shakespeare song put to music. But he had to, my friend, endure like 40 people singing this. And I was on I was on last. And like a true kind of, you know, test of our friendship. And so you get recalled if you're, you know, if they think you sing the stock song well, you get recalled. So I did get recalled and I came second. And apparently I came second because I took a breath in the middle of a phrase.
Oh.
Which is just unforgivable. Mm. After winter and before wind, I think. And I got second place. So it was a kind of an indication to me that maybe, you know, I'd always been doing impressions of people and doing, you know, comedy stuff. And I mean, mainly impressions of people that came into the house, I have to say. And I wish, you know, I still wish they were, you know, extremely kind of worldwide famous, because then I'd have earned a fortune.
Yes.
at a much younger age. So it sort of, I think it sort of was an indication to me that I wanted to go down a looser kind of.
Yeah. And then it was acting in Trinity.
Yeah, I got into the acting course in Trinity, did an audition. It was the first time I think there was a proper recognized formal acting training, because I really didn't know what to do, you know, when I left school. I thought, so I got a singing scholarship to the College of Music for a year. But after that, I was thinking, like, what am I actually going to do? I don't know. So I thought maybe about going to London. And then this course came up in Trinity. So I thought, no, I'll do that. And I mean, when I say I'll do that, I auditioned for it and managed to get in, which was brilliant. Mm. And it led to, you know, the snowball effect of getting work as an actor, like jobbing kind of theatre work. And then eventually doing stuff in the Abbey and the Gate and, and all that.
And but in the early days, you kind of went to New York and London a bit as well.
I did, yeah. I went to New York with the, originally with the, well, as part of my training in Trinity, we went to America and I ended up, you know, doing a 3-week course in the Eugene O'Neill Theatre Centre in the American musical. And I mean, there's a bit of a story there where I everybody had to get, you know, a leotard, and as part of the 3-week course, because we were doing American musical kind of dance routines and tap dance routines and everything. So I was late to the game, and I went up to Dance World on Parnell Square, and I said, "Do you have a leotard in my size, please?" And they said, "We don't have a leotard, but we can give you a cat suit." And I was like, "What the hell is a cat suit?" But anyway, she showed me what a cat suit was. And I said, "I need a pair of tap shoes as well to go with that." And she said, "What size?" And I said, 10. And she said, "I don't think we've got 10. We've got ones in white that are tap shoes in your size." So I said, "Okay, yeah, grand." So I tried on the cat suit and the tap shoes and all, like, you know, looked reasonably ridiculous to me. But not as ridiculous as when we were lined up in the Eugene O'Neill Theatre Centre and I was wearing the same outfit as the women. And the men were wearing, all the lads were wearing a slightly different outfit. They had the black tap shoes and I had the white ones with the little strap. So basically they were like sandal sort of, you know, tap shoes.
Did they make you change it? Or
no,
it was New York.
No,
it was
no, but the choreographer kind of went, "Okay, I see. All right. I see what we have here." So, yeah, it was a nice intro into it.
And were you tempted to stay in New York and pursue things there?
Yeah, I kind of was. You know, I was there for about a year and a half, I suppose, and I got a certain amount of acting work. I actually did the ad. I don't know if there are people, you know, what kind of age your listenership is, but if anyone remembers Sean... It's 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, but it's breakfast time back home.
Yeah,
that was me. I was the first gig I got in New York, and actually was shot in New York. And I mean, like, you travel all that way, and you get bloody galty at. And so that was the first thing I did, and I got some theatre work, and it was mainly theatre. But then I met my my wife, basically. So I came back.
Yeah.
And, so it's all her fault.
But your wife works in advertising, or that's...
Yeah.
She was, like, giving you gigs.
She was.
Yeah.
She was. She didn't give me that gig.
Yes.
She didn't give me that
gig. Right.
But yeah, she worked in an advertising agency, and we met, actually, doing demos for, I'm sure I'm allowed to say it, Smithwick, which is obviously a very romantic... pulling kind of product. and one word borrowed another, so I stayed I stayed in Ireland. And that's more or less around the time when I met Barry Murphy as well. And we started the madness of doing...
How did you meet him? Can you remember the
We met because I was doing a show. I was doing a musical called A Slice of Saturday Night, again very highbrow, in Andrews Lane, and that was a musical kind of set in the 60s, and it was all about, you know, boyhood dreams and adolescence and stuff. And I met Barry because the sound engineer thought myself and Barry were brothers. She said, "You must be related to Barry Murphy." And I was like, "I don't know who you're talking
about." No, I could see that. Yeah, yeah, absolutely, you could see that.
And I've said before, like, it was worse for Barry because people were saying to him, "Richard," and he was like, "What is Richard? Is it some kind of a disease that I, you know?" So yeah, we had known about each other, and then we met, and we got on like a house on fire. Just, you know, made each other laugh, and really kind of buzzed off each other.
Mm.
And to the extent that you know, we were, I kind of entertaining ourselves, and you know, we'd go out and go to parties and stuff, and we'd just literally kind of riff off each other with regard to football, particularly. Football was our main kind of connection, I suppose, and taking the mickey out of people who talked about it for a living.
Yeah.
And we realized that people were kind of listening to what we were doing. And, like, you know, you'd be at a party and the music would be going down, the volume would be going down, and people would be actually kind of engaged with what we were doing.
Mm.
And I mean, Barry was doing stuff in the Comedy Cellar at the time. with Mr. Trellis, and then we kind of just, yeah, we just focused on doing more stuff together, and then Gary came on board, and RTE somehow took a risk on it.
Do you know anything about it? Because I would imagine that would have been a hard sell to RTE, that we'll have a segment at the end of the sports coverage where you basically take the mickey of everything that's happened over the last 2 hours.
Absolutely. And I think if it was now, I don't think it would be accepted. And I think if it was done in those, done through those formal channels, like if it was, say, through the Variety Department, as it was called then, the Variety Department. That was not so long ago. They had a department called the Variety Department.
Well, they used to call it the Entertainment, but then they decided that was sticking their neck out. So they just said it's Variety.
Exactly. Let's not push it. unintentionally entertaining. But yeah, so it sort of, we went through the side door, the back door, I suppose, through sport, and it emerged really, as opposed to it being a big flag waving thing that this is, we're going to be really funny and this is a really new funny show on RTE, which I think actually was the death knell for a lot of comedy that was produced or entertainment on RTE, was that they were kind of, you know, egging it on and doing all this PR stuff about it before it even had gone on screen. So people were going, oh yeah, is it? We'll see about that.
Yeah.
and no better people to destroy a bit of creativity than us.
And so then what was the turnaround? Because you were obviously under pressure. You know, you were doing this, you were doing comedy almost in real time.
We were, yeah. And I mean, when it started out, we were literally in the same studio as the people we were taking the mickey out of, like Bill O'Hurley, Dunphy and Brady. And well, Brady wasn't on board then, but Giles was there. And so, yeah, we did. We were literally like jotting down what they had said or what the commentator might have said and doing a spin on it. And I mean, the first... In 1998, it was called Après Match because of the French World Cup. That's where it was. That's where it took place. And we were, you know, the first few episodes of Après Match, we were talking nonsense, like for about 5 minutes. We were on live, you know. Mm. And it was really sort of a bit of a free for all. And I was seeing people like Trevor Brooking, you know, who was a bit meandering anyway. But I had the license to be as meandering as I wanted, which is baffling to me. And Barry was doing Frank Stapleton with the box on his head, which he did on the end.
Yes, yes, indeed. Yeah.
With that, she did as well. So it snowballed really all at once. And I mean, one of the things I was saying to Simon on the phone was that in those days, like there was such a focus on RTE, whereas now the viewing habits of everyone are so completely different and varied. Yeah. And also it was around the time when Ireland actually were good at football.
Mm.
They managed to qualify for stuff. So there's a massive kind of, you know, focus concentration on what RTE's output was.
Yeah.
And so as a result of that, we were kind of in everyone's kind of mindset, I guess.
Yeah, and the panels were like, they were stars as well.
Of course they were, absolutely. Yeah. And we sort of inadvertently really capitalized on that. We didn't sort of know. And there was no internet. You know what I mean? It's hard to believe that now, but there was no, you weren't like looking at your social media feed to see how something went down or what the reaction was to it. You're just, you know, and we decided to take a punt on doing a live version of the show in Vicar Street in 2000. And that was pushed by Richard Cook, and who's a, you know, producer and an agent and everything. And we kind of thought, we had no idea really how the sales were going to go. And the first night of it, it was like, honestly, we were walking out onto the pitch and the crowd were all lads in their kind of, I guess, teens up to kind of the age of 30 or 40, but they were going, yeah! You know, it was just insane, the reaction. And like, you know, later when I did, we did impressions of Mick McCarthy after the Saipan debacle, and I did it at the Cork Opera House, and literally, get out, you know, like, I'm not actually him, to remind people.
Yeah.
But it really, yeah, it really definitely did capture.
Yeah, it was a singularly Irish thing as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a really good point, that it's not really something, I mean, as we can tell from what happened in the World Cup last night, they're not brilliant at laughing at themselves. Mm. I mean, especially if you're really kind of poking fun at something they're quite sensitive about, which is football. And they take their punditry and everything extremely seriously over there. I mean, it's kind of incredible that, like, you know, here we are all these years later, and, you know, they lost the game last night, and they have to blame somebody. So they blame the German.
Yeah. Yes. Usefully.
Yeah. Like, well, you know, the German.
Have you, because we're in the World Cup, have you looked at a match occasionally and thought, oh, I wish we were still doing this? Or has that gone in a way?
Yeah. There are moments in the match where, not so much with punditry, but there are moments that, you know, I just think the whole, like, emphasis on Beckham and FIFA and all that, I think there's a lot of material there that we would have had a field day with. More, I suppose, like just visually kind of comic material, as opposed to it, as I say, you know, the pundits are fine. Like, I mean, what can they do, really? It's following who they followed, like, you know, Eamon and Bill and John was just such a, you know, it was of its own time, and the pundits that are there now are grand, but they're not, you know, they're just not as...
No one's breaking any pencils.
No, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
I do like Dee Dee Hammond. I think, I mean, just from a
character point of view, and also just from the accent point of view, yes. Of like the, you know, the half Scouser, half German, which is fantastic too, you know, if you have a, you know, just to repeat it. Yeah. It's,
I should ask you about your show, Out of His Head. Is it brand new? Is it bits you've collated over the years, or?
Yeah, it is brand new. It's material I've had in my back pocket for a while, and what it's done really is it's given me the license to do characters that I've always, impressions that I've always done, and I call them characters really because they start out as impressions, like, say, my impression of Pat Kenny, for example. Obviously it talks like that, and a certain amount of restriction in how he speaks, but then I develop him in the live show into doing something that maybe is foreign to what people might expect.
Oh, I could tell you a story. maybe not.
So yeah, it's just putting people in different scenarios, and it's a combination, yeah, of stand-up and jokes and sketches and impressions and a couple of songs. I mean, I'd have to bring songs.
Of course, yeah. And it must be quite different. The whole thing is hanging on you. You don't have people on stage.
Absolutely. And I'm so used to being part of a team, whether it's been on stage in The Gate or The Abbey or with Apres Match. And I mean, I have done quite a lot of effectively stand-up routines in corporate settings, so like I do like a half an hour after dinner speech, and obviously it's not the same thing, but it's not, you know, it's not a completely different thing. It's not like being an astronaut or
yes, you
know, there is a connection.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's developed over the last sort of 3 or 4 years, but all the material is I mean, there's some older impressions, like I do. One of the themes in the show is comparing what it was like 20 years ago compared to what it is now in terms of what you're allowed to say and what you're not allowed to say, or how that's perceived. And the difference between, you know, the cultural landscapes like RTE and you know, the programs that they used to produce, like the Housewife of the Year. And I go into all that and just like, you know, the then compared to the now.
Yeah.
And the difference, and so there's a lot of material out there at the moment. People say, oh God, you know, it's all got very sanitized and you can't say anything anymore. I mean, I don't actually think that's true. I'm not really sure who's saying that, you know, or why they're saying that, because there's lots of stuff you can say.
Yeah.
You just don't have to be kind of a racist.
Yeah.
Bigot.
Well, that's possibly, you know, an indication of who's saying that then,
yeah,
that you can't say anything anymore. Yeah. Richard, thanks a million for coming into us. When are you on, actually? But you're in the Crackdown. What days are you on?
I'm actually just in the 24th of July in the Crackdown at the Paddy Power Comedy Festival. And my own tour... all the details are on richardcooper.com.
There you go. Great stuff. Richard, thanks a million for coming into us. Richard Cooper there.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.